Welcome to the Startup Fair. Are you an exhibitor?
Yeah, Rachel Dunn, Twinkle Cupcakes.
Right. Got your schedule and coffee token?
Yep.
Oh, and your public liability insurance?
No.
We need it for all stallholders. Contact Direct Line. Their annual public liability policy covers you at trade fairs, and they'll email right away to confirm you're covered.
So I could still set it up today?
Sure.
With an extra coffee token.
Nice try. Next, please.
Instant proof and confirmation of cover. Can your public liability insurance do that? Search Direct Line Public Liability Insurance. Valid email address required, underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.
Wednesday, March 16th, 2016, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we bring you a new podcast every single Wednesday and talk about some of the top sports stories that are going on in the world today, give you our own unique slant on them. You can download and subscribe on iTunes. You can go to places like Stitcher or Podcast Republic, pretty much anywhere that has podcasts, you can probably find the Daily Dose. Or you can head over to our website. You can listen to it there, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. We do post an article or two every week, and we always include a link to the show if you would like to listen to it there. If you'd like to contact the show, we like to get this stuff out of the way up front. You can email us, dailydosesports@gmail.com. You can also like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. Today on the show, hey, March Madness is here. We will get you ready for the NCAA basketball tournament like no other. And let's be honest, we're going to try to help you fill out that March Madness bracket that you know you want to try to do well in when you're filling it out in your office pool, or maybe you have a family pool or whatever it might be. You want to try to hit that March Madness bracket. Going to try to help you fill that out just a little bit. Plus, we have some NFL news, and as usual, we have our Daily Dose Top 5, always a very, very popular segment. You do not want to miss that. Got a couple things coming out in the world of sports news today that I wanted to talk about and discuss just a little bit. The New England Patriots are getting a little bit active with some trades and making some moves. You might have saw that they traded defensive end Chandler Jones to the Arizona Cardinals in exchange for a draft pick and Jonathan Cooper, an offensive tackle. Now, what we like to call that move is the, that's a move brought to you by Von Miller, because that move is purely the result of Tom Brady probably having like a bruised spleen after what Von Miller did to him in the AFC Championship game. So they ship Jones off. They bring back Cooper, probably a good deal for them. Then today, the New England Patriots have agreed to a one-year deal with free agent defensive end Chris Long. Long had played with the St. Louis Rams. I guess I better call them the St. Louis Rams still. They're not quite Los Angeles yet. Patriots are starting to make a couple moves, trying to shore up that offensive line while not sacrificing completely their defensive line. They have a few priorities on that defense. They've got to get a few guys signed, and these hopefully clear up some money for them to do that. You might have saw yesterday, the Denver Broncos were able to match the offer that the Miami Dolphins gave running back C.J. Anderson. I want to talk a little bit about NFL free agency. And I want to talk a little bit about why the Broncos did what they did with C.J. Anderson, as well as some of the other things that obviously have taken place over the last few days. You might have seen President Barack Obama picked his March Madness tournament. He picked Kansas to win the NCAA title. He is going to have them beating North Carolina in the final. Of course, he took the favorites. I guess that's what politicians do. You know, they're front runners. That's kind of just what they do. That's pretty much anybody. But yeah, and he's done okay on some of his pools that he's picked. So we will keep an eye on that. And like I said, we will get you ready for March Madness here in just a few minutes. I don't know if you saw this one. This is one that you might have missed. I don't know. It was announced yesterday that apparently Steven Spielberg and Harrison Ford are going to team up for yet another Indiana Jones movie. No, really. Another Indiana Jones movie. It is going to be released through Disney in July of 2019. What is Harrison Ford, like 76? He's going to be closing in on 80 when this movie comes out. Now, I was a big fan of the Indiana Jones movies. The first one and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, the Lost Crusade, the Temple of Doom. I love those movies. And then they had that last one Indiana Jones and the Hunt for UFOs or whatever that one was. That kind of soured me on the franchise, I'll be honest. Probably should have called it quits then. What are they going to do now? What in the world are they going to do now with yet another Indiana Jones? And it's not like they're bringing on the new guy. It's not like they're saying, okay, well, we're going to get rid of Harrison Ford or we're going to bring on the new young kid. Harrison Ford's still going to be the guy. Well, here's the thing. Here at the Daily Dose, you know how we do, and we like to help people. We like to help people. That's what we do here. And so I thought maybe it might be a good idea if we threw out a couple of ideas that they could go, a couple directions they could go with this new Indiana Jones movie. Okay? Yeah, play the music. Here are a couple of ideas that maybe they could go with on this new Indiana Jones movie that might make a little more sense when you're talking about a closing in on 80 years of age Indiana Jones. Here's a couple things we had in mind. How about Indiana Jones and the Lost Bladder Control? I'm just throwing that out there. Not the worst idea. Not the worst idea. Indiana Jones and the Retirement Home of Doom. Maybe that would be another way to go. Indiana Jones and the Enlarged Prostate. I don't know if anyone's going to go see that. Seems like that might be something that people wouldn't want to see. Indiana Jones and the Lost Reading Glasses on His Forehead. I think that's a possibility. And our last one, let's go with Indiana Jones and the Curse of the Slippery Shower. You know, just some ideas. Again, I'm trying to help you. I know Steven Spielberg's a bright guy. I'm just trying to help you. Help me help you. So, you know, a couple ideas maybe for the new 80-year-old Indiana Jones as it comes out. Let's jump in because we got a lot of things to get to today. The NFL. The big fireworks were last week in the NFL with some of the big name players moving around in free agency. And I want to talk a little about some of those moves. I want to look at some of the winners and losers in free agency. Now, here's the thing I want you to keep in mind as we talk about the winners and losers in free agency. Most of the big networks, you can go turn on the NFL Network, you can go turn on ESPN, whatever it might be. And what they're going to say was, let's look at winners and losers, and the winners are the teams that were the most active, and the losers were the teams that were the least active. But we know that's not true. Quantity doesn't equal quality. I want you to think about this. Over the past few seasons, who are the usual winners in NFL free agency? Who are the most active teams in NFL free agency? Let me tell you who the teams are. The teams that make the most moves, by number of moves, the Miami Dolphins, the New York Jets, the Philadelphia Eagles, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, do you see any kind of, you know, trend there? They're the teams that are always the most active in NFL free agency. Now, those are also teams that don't win very much. Now, do you know who doesn't win the NFL free agency game that much? Who is not considered winners that much? Teams like the New England Patriots, the Seattle Seahawks, the Denver Broncos, the Green Bay Packers, the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's almost like there's some sort of correlation. If you're out there signing and signing and signing and signing free agents, you're probably having some struggles because you're not building from within. You're not building through the draft. You're not building within your own organization. And so when I look at the winners and losers in free agency, I'm not just going to sit here and say, well, they made the most moves, so they won. That's not how this works. You don't win because you made the most moves. I don't have any idea if you're going to win. And I probably am not going to know for 2 or 3 years if you won in free agency. But we are going to give you the winners and losers in NFL free agency. Our first winner has got to be quarterback Brock Osweiler. Hey, Osweiler sucker punched the Broncos. Let's be real clear about that. He signs with the Houston Texans, 4-year deal for $72 million. Despite the fact, no one knows if he can really play. Yes, he looked good times this past season. There were moments that he looked good. There were moments against the New England Patriots that Brock Osweiler looked like, yeah, he led a late game comeback and got the win. There were moments against the Cincinnati Bengals where he takes them down 2 consecutive drives and finds a way to get the win. And then there were also times when he failed to generate any points whatsoever, like the second half against the Oakland Raiders. At home, I might add. And both times, he faced the San Diego Chargers when the only thing that got them through it was, first off, the defense, and in the second game, the defense and a little bit of a boost from Peyton Manning. And keep in mind that the San Diego Chargers were, what, 5-11? And he couldn't do anything against them? So is he a legit franchise quarterback? Maybe. I don't know. But he's a winner because he got paid like one. Now, it's a little odd to me. It's a little odd to me that instead of being a defending Super Bowl champion, you go to Houston. I mean, who's the last great quarterback that's ever come out of Houston? And I don't mean recent. I mean ever. George Blanda? Are we going to get Dan Pastorini? I don't know. I mean, I guess you can throw Warren Moon in there. He didn't win much, but I guess you can throw Warren Moon in there. He put up huge stats, but I can tell you this. Brock Osweiler is no Warren Moon. So I don't know why you would go take that job as opposed to saying, hey, I'm going to be... Maybe he was mad that he got benched? Maybe he was mad that, you know, Peyton came in and took over? I don't know. But I got to give him some credit because here's a guy who's played 7 games in 4 seasons... And he just got paid like he's been a 4-year starter. So, yeah, I guess he's definitely the winner. Let's give you a loser. A loser in NFL free agency. I'm going to go with former New York Giants coach Tom Coughlin. The Giants go on a complete spending spree. They get Keenan Robinson, Olivia Vernon, Damon Harrison, Janoris Jenkins. Coughlin has to be sitting there going, where was all this when I was coaching? You guys didn't give me jack. I didn't get anything. You just let me go out there with the same scrubs we had every single year and Jason Pierre-Paul with a couple of fingers. Where was all this spending when I was still coaching? So, yeah, I think Tom Coughlin has got to kind of be a loser. I'm going to give you another winner. A winner in NFL free agency has got to be the San Francisco 49ers. Now, you might be sitting there saying, well, who did they sign? I don't have any idea who they signed. I don't know if they signed anybody. Maybe they didn't sign anybody. But I want you to think about this from the San Francisco 49ers perspective. It's 2012. You go to the Super Bowl. You barely lose to the Baltimore Ravens. And you have the next great young quarterback. Colin Kaepernick is going to dominate pro football for years to come. And then, over the next year or two, every player in that organization either retires, gets arrested, or signs somewhere else. And we realize that Jim Harbaugh, who also left, was kind of getting it done with like duct tape and WD-40. And Kaepernick probably doesn't really know how to play quarterback in the NFL. They end up benching Kaepernick this past season for Blaine Gabbert. And as disturbing as that is, Gabbert actually comes in and looks significantly better than Kaepernick does. But see, here's the thing. In the year of awful free agent quarterbacks, people have managed to talk themselves into Colin Kaepernick being like the next Steve Young. And somehow the 49ers are currently shopping this clown and telling people, he'd rather go here. Well, he'd rather play with the Browns. Well, you know what? I think he'd really like to go to the Jets. Well, and they're actually shopping him like he's a commodity. Because in this year of horrible free agent quarterbacks, he sort of is. I mean, think about this. This guy is like the LaCar lemon. And he's being sold around the league right now as a Lamborghini. And the salesman that is selling him is telling prospective buyers, I don't even know if you can really afford this guy. I mean, it's really a pretty good car. I don't even know if you can afford it. I don't even know if he wants to come be your car. I think he might want to go. This is a garbage quarterback that doesn't know how to play the position. And the San Francisco 49ers have somehow spun this into he's a great quarterback. Now, maybe I've said before, and you can go back and you can listen. I've said before, I think this guy needs to be coached. I think he needs to learn how to play the quarterback position. I don't know if he just didn't learn or if he's forgotten or he's scared behind that offense. I don't know what it is. But he needs to be coached up. Maybe if he's coached up, he's serviceable. But the 49ers are cashing in because right now they are basically telling everyone how great Colin Kaepernick is. And keep in mind, he was benched for Blaine Gabbert, a loser. One more loser on our list. I got to put the Denver Broncos as a loser on our list, but not for what you might think. Not for what you might think. Let me explain why I put the Denver Broncos on this list. There are a couple of reasons. Look, I have no problem. You go win the Super Bowl, you have a bunch of free agents coming due, you're going to lose some people. That's just fact. That's just how the league works. They're going to come poach your roster. That's just what teams do. They lost Malik Jackson. They lost Danny Trevathan. They lost Brock Osweiler. Looks like they're going to lose safety David Bruton. They're going to lose offensive tackle Ryan Harris. I get that. They have some depth at defensive line. They have some depth at linebacker. Here's something to think about. The guys these guys were signed by NFL teams with like a 40% winning percentage. So, they're struggling. Jacksonville, Chicago, Houston, just for those three guys, paid a combined $80 million in guaranteed money. Not in contracts. Not in here's what you might get. $80 million in guaranteed money alone. So, I get that. When you're a Super Bowl champion, teams are going to come, loot your roster. I understand that. The Broncos did sign offensive tackle Donald Stevenson. They need offensive line help, so I'm fine with that. They're going to need some more offensive line help still before it's all over. Here's the problem that I have with the Denver Broncos and what has gone on with their offseason moves so far. Running back C.J. Anderson, I told you earlier, we re-signed him yesterday. He was signed to an offer. They had to match the offer Miami gave. What happened with that? C.J. is a restricted free agent. When the Broncos sent out their initial offer, they lowballed him. They sent him a low, low, low offer and basically said they didn't think anyone was going to match that. Miami came in, so they lowball him. They say, hey, we'll give you $1 million. Miami comes in and says, we'll give you $3 million. Then Denver starts looking around and saying, hey, wait a second. We can't find anyone else. I mean, it's not a huge running back market this year. You have the top of the top, you have some of the studs up top, and then after that, it really, really drops down. So CJ's probably our best bet. We better keep him. Then they have to up the offer that Miami sent, so they bump it up to $5 million that he's going to be guaranteed. If you would have just offered him $3 million to start with, you probably would have had him for $3 million. But that wasn't the case. They lowballed it, and they offered him, the cheapest they could. Now, they have to give him a $5.25 million guaranteed signing bonus. A better offer up front would have saved them about $3 million in cap room. So that's the biggest problem I have with them. I understand you're going to get your roster looted. Guys want to go. They're going to take advantage. They're going to get as much money as they can. I get it. But you got to make a little bit of more business sense when you're dealing with the guys you do want to keep. Let me give you another winner. Another kind of odd winner. The Cincinnati Bengals, Pac-Man Jones. This idiot actually got the Bengals and the Dolphins into a bidding war for his services. He's almost 33 years old. He was signed to a three-year deal for $20 million by the Cincinnati Bengals. Keep in mind, this is despite the fact that he had the penalty that cost this franchise a playoff victory versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. And somehow, they're like, no, we got to have him. He's the guy we got to have. There's no question about that. We got to have Pac-Man back on our roster. Really? You couldn't? This is why Cincinnati remains Cincinnati. This is why the Bengals can't ever change. Why they are always the same Bengals again and again and again. Because they do dumb things like this. But hey, Pac-Man Jones, no, you're definitely a winner. I wondered if that's in a different town. If that's in like Green Bay or Denver or somewhere like that, they probably cut him the day after that penalty. In Cincinnati, they give him a new, bigger deal. That's the Bengals. Our final loser in NFL free agency, we have got to give to the Cleveland Browns. No, I'm not picking on the Browns. I'm really not. There's kind of this misconception about Denver and Cleveland because of the history we had with all those AFC championship games and the drive and the fumble and all those games that went on back in the 80s. There's kind of this feeling that like Denver hates Cleveland. We don't have any beef with Cleveland. Like when you're the bully beating up on the other kid, you don't really care. And that's what it's always been. So I'm not picking on the Browns. I think most fans in Denver kind of like Cleveland. Like, we wish the Browns were better. Like, they're the kind of a scrappy blue-collar town. We kind of wish they would be better. We don't have beef with Cleveland. But here's the problem I have with Cleveland. I want you to think about this. Because remember, they've kind of redone their front office. They brought in that guy from the Cleveland Indians. He was going to kind of, redo the way that they did business. They had 4-5 big-name free agents they needed to keep. How many did they keep? None. They lost wide receiver Travis Benjamin to San Diego. They lost starting center Alex Mack to the Atlanta Falcons. They lost offensive tackle Mitchell Schwartz to the Kansas City Chiefs. They lost safety Tashawn Gibson to Jacksonville Jaguars. Oh, and they also had to end that horrible Johnny Manziel experiment. All of this while they signed no one. They didn't sign any free agents. And here's the worst part about it. It's not just that it went bad like this for the Cleveland Browns. It's the way that it went bad. Because from all reports, from everybody that went in and visited with this new management group and this new front office group, they said they were completely unprofessional. They had no idea what they were doing. The Cleveland Browns are going to be a garbage team for quite a while. And I, to be honest, that's disappointing. I wish Cleveland was better. I think the NFL is better when you have a team like that that is better. They're not going to be good anytime soon, and that's too bad because they've got a great great fan base back there. But they just continue. The ownership and the management just continue to shoot themselves in the foot again and again and again. Huge, huge loser, the Cleveland Browns. You know, free agency continues to evolve, and we will kind of keep an eye on it and see where it goes over the next few weeks, and it won't be long. It won't be long. We're going to be talking about, you know, some NFL draft stuff, which will be coming up very, very soon. Got to get over to March Madness. We've got to get over to March Madness. It is that magical time of year. It is the magical time of year, that sporting event that actually lives up to the hype. The time of year when the little old lady at your office becomes an expert on, like, defensive efficiency, and a number of people at your office somehow come down with a two-day mysterious illness. I don't know how. I don't know how it works, but it always seems to happen right around this time. You have got to love March Madness. I want to take a look at March Madness. I want to take a look at a few stories, a few players, a few teams that I kind of like, and we'll just kind of see where it goes. Let's look at some of the biggest storylines coming out in March Madness this year. You know, the last few seasons, we've had the Kentuckys, the Dukes, the Louisvilles, the Connecticuts. They're winning with some great freshmen, with some great young players. This season, when you take a look at the bracket, a lot of the top teams have senior leadership, and that's something completely different than what we've seen over the past few years. I don't know if it's a trend. I don't know if it's a one-time thing. But you look at teams like Kansas, Virginia, Michigan State, Oklahoma. They are led by seniors, and when you get into a tournament like this, when you get in, especially when you're talking about a tournament where it is one and done, it is do or die, experience, there's just no substitute for it. You can look at guys and say they're really, really talented. They have amazing athletic ability, whatever it might be. There is no substitute for experience in this situation. And we are seeing this season seniors having a nice, nice year this year. One of the other things we look at when we look at big storylines this year, there's a lot of losers in this bracket. Now, I'm not saying they're all bad teams, but you know, every season we say how wide open and like unpredictable the tournament is. It is more true than ever this year. Think about this. Kansas has the best record in all of the nation, but they've lost four times. We've had seven different teams voted number one. Out of the 68 teams in the bracket, 33 of them have double-digit losses. It's wide open. I mean, I know, like I said, we throw that around a lot. It's a wide open season. There is no big, heavy favorite. I guess you'd put Kansas and Michigan State in there. After that, it's I don't know, because there's just a lot. And again, we've seen both of those teams get beat. So it's just a wide open field. There are a lot of teams that have suffered losses. Each one of these teams has a little bit of flaw to them, and they can't all be beat. Parity is creeping in more and more every single year. Another storyline to keep in mind, the NCAA committee was not impressed with the Big Ten. They didn't really think the Big Ten was all that special. I want you to think about this. You look at the Big Ten, year in, year out, one of the best basketball conferences in the country. Think about this. Michigan State, the highest seed at a number two. Indiana won the regular season Big Ten, championship, not the tournament, but the regular season. They are a number five. Purdue is a number five. Maryland is a number five. Iowa is a number seven. Wisconsin is a number seven. Michigan is an 11 and playing in the play-in game. I realize that the bottom of the Big Ten is really bad. You got Rutgers, Minnesota, Illinois. I understand that. That conference is pretty good. Keep an eye on the Big Ten. because they kind of got disrespected by the committee. I want to see if how that all plays out and see if they are actually a little bit better than maybe they got some credit for. This might be the best matchups in play-in games that I think we've had. I mean, you know, when they started this whole play-in game thing, the last, you know, I don't know, a couple years ago, they started the play-in game, and basically they'd take the 16s, the, you know, the very worst teams in the whole thing, and they'd say, okay, you guys play each other, and then whoever, you know, gets in gets to go play a one and get killed. Oh, yeah, great. That's exciting. Now, they still do that two of the games. But in the other two games, you have 11 seeds. Last night, you had Vandy, number 11, versus number 11, Wichita State. Pretty close game early. Wichita State pulls away late and now advances. You also have Michigan playing Tulsa tonight. Again, two number 11s. Those are solid games. I mean, those genuinely feel like NCAA playoff games. I mean, it doesn't feel, I mean, that feels like a tournament game. That doesn't feel like a, well, you're sort of in the tournament. No, these actually kind of feel like, I realize they're still playing games. They're actually pretty good competition. I mean, Vanderbilt and Wichita State, those were two pretty, you know, big favorites coming into the season. They've underachieved. They've had some injuries, and they've had just had some situations where they didn't quite get to the level that they wanted. But those are two teams that are pretty good. The committee kind of changing some things up and giving us a little bit better games in those play-in games, which at least makes it a little more interesting. I actually watched the Wichita State Vandy game last night, and I never watch those play-in games. I'll be honest. I just don't. Let's take a look at some of the best players that are going to be in this tournament, because it's funny, you know, in March Madness, because players we would never know become like household names. No, they may not go on to the NBA. I don't know. But for like 2 or 3 weeks in a given year, we know these guys and we watch everything they do throughout the tournament. I want you to think about this. Guys like Bo Kimble at Loyola Marymount, Bryce Drew at Valparaiso, Fearless Freddie Banks at UNLV, who can forget like Sherman Douglas at Syracuse. There are always, it seems like every year, there's a few players that we kind of get to know, we kind of fall in love with, we kind of keep an eye on, worth watching. Let me give you a few players. If you're new to this, maybe you're not, you know, you're not a huge college basketball person, here's a few players that you're going to want to watch that it's definitely going to be worth your time to keep an eye on. Got to start with Buddy Hield at Oklahoma. It might be the most exciting player in the tournament. Buddy averages 25 points a game. Now, you hear that and you think, well, maybe he's a gunner. Maybe he's a guy that, you know, he's just a shooter, goes out there and just chucks it up. Here's the thing. Buddy Hield shoots almost 50% from the field. He's really, really efficient with the way he scores, and he can score a ton. And the crazy thing when I watch him is sometimes it's quiet. Sometimes you're like, yeah, how's he doing today? Well, he's got 24. He has 24? And then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, he puts up another 12, and you're like, finished with 36? Very, very entertaining player to watch. Keep an eye on him. I've told you before, probably my favorite player in the country is Michigan State's Denzel Valentine. Just does whatever it takes. He can score inside. He can score outside. He can rebound. He's a very, very good passer. 19 points a game. Almost 8 rebounds a game, almost 8 assists a game. I mean, that's almost a triple-double. Denzel Valentine, if you get a chance to watch him, again, I know there's other players. I know there's guys that are going to get more interest than he does in the NBA draft. For my money, that's the guy that I want. I'll give you a player. I don't know if he's going to have an NBA future, but he is fun to watch, and that is the 5'9 guard, Tyler Ulis, out of the University of Kentucky. Shortest player in SEC history to win the Conference Player of the Year. Ulis can score from anywhere. He is a deadly shooter, and he is an absolute jet. I don't know how Kentucky's going to do this year. They've kind of just continued to get better and better and better as the season has progressed, but Tyler Ulis is worth watching. If Kentucky's on, watch this little guy go. He is a lot of fun to watch. The last guy that I'll give you, and I think we talked about him a little bit even in the preseason college basketball preview. I love Providence's Chris Dunn. He's probably going to be a top 5 NBA pick. Again, it's just an all-around game that he has. 16 points a game, 6 rebounds a game, 6 assists a game. But he was also named the Big East Defensive Player of the Year. So he's just a complete player. A couple of these guys, Valentine, Chris Dunn, these are guys that if you sit there and you have a young person in your house that plays basketball, you say, hey, watch the way they play, because the way they play is the way the game should be played. Just some really, really fun players that are going to be in this tournament. And you know how it is in the tournament. You know how it is in March Madness. The further and further it gets, we're going to learn new guys. We're going to learn new names. We're going to pick up guys that go to maybe small schools that you've never heard of that are going to be a lot of fun to watch. A couple teams that I like in the tournament. And yes, I can easily go with teams, the big names teams. Kansas. Obviously, Kansas is loaded. They got some seniors. They do a number of good things. Kentucky. They seem to be playing hot, at least at the right time. I struggle a little bit with what Kentucky's doing because the fact that you beat, you know, the rest of the SEC in the SEC tournament doesn't mean that much to me. I know the SEC is a little bit down this year, so not quite as high on Kentucky as maybe some other people. I could talk about Duke and what they've done. I think they're a little bit soft inside. I think they're a little bit they struggle a little bit to defend. But you know, in March Madness, we get teams that no one knows, and they, for like a few weeks, for like, you know, 2 weeks, they grab our attention, and we kind of get to know them. So these teams might be a little bit under your radar, but I want to give you a few teams that you should keep an eye on as we progress through these next few weeks. And again, these might not be the big name teams, but they're teams you might want to get to know. First team that I kind of like, I've watched them, and I'll be honest, the teams that I put on this list, there were a couple teams I wanted to put on here that I've seen clips, but I didn't actually watch a game. These are teams that I've actually seen play. These are teams that I've actually watched a game of, not that I'm just guessing or going off of what they tell me. First team on my list, I got to go with Northern Iowa. I know they aren't 30-3 like they were last year, but I want you to keep in mind some of the teams that Northern Iowa has beaten. They beat Stephen F. Austin, who was in the tournament. They beat Wichita State, who won last night. They beat Iowa State, who was ranked like number 5 in the country at the time. Oh, yeah. And they beat North Carolina this year. The thing about Northern Iowa, they don't turn the ball over. They're so efficient offensively. They don't have many giveaways. They can shoot a little bit. They shoot about 46% from the field. They just take care of the basketball. Now, they face Texas, first year with Shaka Smart in the first round. Could they go in and knock off Texas? I would not be surprised by it at all. Keep an eye on Northern Iowa. Another team, a little bit of a smaller school that maybe you've heard of. I don't know how much you know about them. The Iona Gaels. Are you familiar with the old Iona story? I'm not sure if you know this story. The old story is that, you know, Jimmy Valvano, just kind of getting his foot in the door coaching wise. He had been an assistant coach. He had gotten the head job at, I think it was Bucknell College. And then he got the head coaching job at Iona, back in probably the '70s. He had gone to a fundraiser. He was doing the meet and greet, you know, meeting the people and kissing the babies and doing all that and kind of promoting himself. He was very, very proud that he had just gotten the job at Iona College. And he was walking around introducing himself. Hi there. How you doing? Jim Valvano, Iona College. Hi, good to meet you. Jim Valvano, Iona College. And he finally ran into one of the ladies that was there that was a big giver, you know, for fundraiser and that kind of thing. And he said, hi there. How you doing? Jim Valvano, Iona College. And she said, aren't you a little young to own a college? That goes back a long ways. The thing about Iona this year, they are playing their best basketball at the right time. I'll be honest, I'm not sure if they can rebound enough to beat Iowa State in the first round. But here's the thing about Iona. They are more than happy to get up and down the floor with Iowa State. I don't know if that's a good formula to beat them, but Iona has AJ English, another one of the most complete players in the tournament. English, you might remember his dad, AJ English. He's actually, I think, the third in line of AJ English's, but his dad played in the NBA back in the 90s. AJ, the son, playing for Iona, 22 points a game, 6 assists a game, 5 rebounds a game, really complete player. You just wonder, could he get hot? We know Iowa State isn't always the best defensively. They're going to get out in the run, and they're going to get out and try to score some points, but is there a chance that maybe Iona gets in kind of an up-and-down match with them and maybe gives them a game? Keep an eye on the Iona Gaels. Another team I kind of like, and a team that I saw for the first time, I believe it was this last weekend. Yes, they have a really uphill battle facing the Kentucky Wildcats. But here's another player you've never heard of, Jameel Warney. might be the best player you've never heard of. This guy has 19 points a game and 11 rebounds a game. In his career at Stony Brook, he has over 2,100 career points. The problem for Stony Brook, because they are scrappy, they may give Kentucky a game. I'm telling you right now, they may battle with Kentucky. The problem is they're not very good at the free throw line. They only shoot about 67% at the free throw line. If it gets into a tight game, that could be a problem. But keep in mind that, you know, Kentucky is coming off of winning that SEC tournament, coming off of everyone patting them on the back, coming off of everyone telling them how great they are. Don't sleep on Stony Brook. You'll get yourself in trouble. Hawaii is a team I really like. I've seen Hawaii play now a couple times. They went 27-5. The problem with Hawaii is being in Hawaii, they don't have the resume that other teams might have because nobody wants to play them. Nobody wants to go over there and take a loss, and nobody wants to really face them because they know they have everything to lose and nothing to gain. Hawaii is very good defensively. They keep teams shooting under 40% from the field. They faced a lot of competition in California. They played about every college that's out in California. All the Cal State blah, blah, blahs. Hawaii's played all of them, and they've beat most of them. So in the first round, when they draw Cal Berkeley, do you think that they're worried about that at all? Hey, we've played every other California team. That doesn't bother us a bit. Keep an eye on Hawaii. They may try to lock Cal up defensively, and they're pretty scrappy if they do. The last team I'm going to give you that I really like has got to be Weber State. Weber State, I know they're a 15. I know. And they're facing a very, very good two in Xavier. But Weber does something that makes them extremely dangerous. They attack you inside, and they draw a lot of fouls. I can tell you, if I'm an opposing head coach, that scares me a lot because everything breaks down if you get inside. Everything breaks down if you're drawing fouls and you're getting us some foul trouble and those kind of things. That style wears you out, and over time you sit there and say, oh, we need to stop, oh, and they got fouled. And we're playing, you know, 20, 25, 30 seconds of defense, and then they get fouled. That is a formula that can wear you out. Add to it the fact they rebound pretty well. Do not sleep on Weber State. They have a front court that could see some time in the NBA. They have some pretty good players down there. I know, like I said, I know they're a 15. I know they're facing a 2 in Xavier. And Xavier's a very, very good team. I like them. But be careful of Weber State. You'll get yourself in trouble. Now, if you're sitting there and you're looking at March Madness, you're saying, yes, I'm going to pick my bracket. And yes, I'm going to try to fill it out. And yes, I hope to win. But I don't know if I'm going to watch all the games. I don't know which games to tune in for. I don't know which games are good. I don't know which games are bad. I don't know which ones to watch. And the thing about March Madness, you never quite know when a good game is going to break out. Sometimes it's not the games you think. I mean, it might be a 15-2 matchup. It might be an 8-9 matchup that ends up going overtimes. You just never know. A good game can break out at any time. I'm going to give you 3 or 4 games here to keep in mind and just kind of mark on your calendar. If you're going to be, you know, near a TV, if you're going to call in sick, a couple games that you might want to watch. Here's a couple games that have at least some interesting storylines to them and could make for some intriguing matchups. One of the first games right out of the gate, Thursday morning, 10:15 a.m., at least Mountain Time, Duke versus UNC Wilmington. Duke should roll. Why would that be a good game? Here's the thing about UNC Wilmington. They force about 15 turnovers a game, and when they do force those turnovers, they usually score off of them. And here's the thing about, you know, being in North Carolina, Wilmington. You know what they hear every day? You're not Duke. Duke this, Duke that. Oh, don't you wish you could have gone to Duke? I bet you wish you were a Duke guy or a Carolina guy or whatever. They're the little, you know, the little brother all the time. And don't be surprised if they come out with a little bit of a chip and try to get after Duke. And I've told you, I think Duke is gettable. I don't know if they're gettable in this game, but I think they're gettable. They're soft inside. They don't always defend. Keep an eye on Duke and UNC Wilmington. If Wilmington can force some turnovers, if they can get some rebounds, if they can at least generate some points, might be a battle all day. Not long after that game on Thursday at noon Mountain Time. Game I just talked about, Iowa State versus Iona. Here are some numbers to keep in mind. Iowa State averages almost 82 points a game. Iona averages about 80 points a game. This is going to be a track meet. If you sit there and say, well, I like college hoops, but sometimes, you know, they zone and it goes slow and they kind of play, you know, walk-up basketball. This is the game for you if you don't like that style. If you like the track meet, we're going to, you know, pitch it ahead. We're going to get the shot up. We're going to put up a ton of shots. It's going to be an up-and-down game, a lot of flow to this game. This is going to be an absolute track meet. If you like scoring, Thursday at noon, Iowa State versus Iona should be a high-scoring affair. Keep that game in mind. Not long after that game, another game that's on Thursday, and I don't know if this game, I don't know how this game's going to go. This could be an ugly game, I won't lie, but this could be an upset. Keep an eye on Purdue versus Arkansas Little Rock. Now, Purdue is huge, a big, huge physical team. They have 2 7-footers. They can go inside. They can play very physical. They have 2 other guys that are like 6'9 in their front court. They are a big, strong, physical team. They should push Little Rock around. But here's the thing. Little Rock can force a lot of turnovers. And here's one other thing I want you to keep in mind when you think of Purdue Little Rock. This game is being played here in the Denver Regional. And sometimes those big guys and those big, strong, fast guys, they start to struggle because they don't like the altitude here at Denver. And so what you'll see is you'll see them come out in the first half and they put up huge numbers in the first half. Oh, no, I feel fine. They go in at halftime. They get some rest. They get some water. They come back out and their legs are heavy and they can't breathe and they're basically playing oxygen deprived. If I was Purdue, I would be very, very concerned. And I like Matt Painter. I like the job that he does back at Purdue. I think that they are a scrappy team. That would worry me a little bit. Not only would it worry me in the first round, it would worry me whoever they face in the second round because you're going to wear down. With those big bodies, you're going to wear down a lot more playing here in Denver. I don't know if that was a very favorable matchup for them. Keep an eye on Purdue Little Rock. Again, I don't know if it'll be a pretty game, but it might be a very, very interesting game. The last game that I'm going to tell you that I think should be at least be on your radar for March Madness in this first round is a game that it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be a little bit crazy. Friday, 5 o'clock Mountain Time, West Virginia, and Stephen F. Austin. Now, you know how they always talk about your team kind of takes on the persona of the coach? West Virginia is a team that I love. I love the way they play. I love how aggressive they are. They press, they trap, they fly around the floor. They are absolutely a great representation of head coach Bob Huggins. Huggins is a tough guy, grew up in a tough era, loves to have that physicality. They're going to come out and press you on every single possession. And Stephen F. Austin is exactly a mirror image. Their head coach is Brad Underwood. He was an assistant coach for Bob Huggins back at Kansas State. So you're going to get the exact same thing. If you want, you know, pressing, defensive pressure, sure sign of how much these teams press. You know, a lot of teams press off a missed free throw. Hey, we got the miss. On the miss, we're green. On the make, we're red, whatever. These teams press on missed field goals. They press on missed free throws. They don't care. They will come up and pressure and pressure and pressure you again and again and again. Fearless, aggressive, and it is going to be a mirror image. I don't know if Stephen F. Austin has the horsepower to hang with West Virginia. I really like what West Virginia has this year. I think they're a little bit better maybe than they were a year or so ago. But this should be an entertaining game, and if you like defensive pressure, if you like that attacking, pressing mentality, Friday, 5 o'clock, West Virginia versus Stephen F. Austin is a game that you will want to see. Now, as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, you never know which way the Daily Dose Top 5 is going to go. It's a couple different ways I thought about going this week. I wanted to kind of talk about, you know, March Madness, obviously. And over the next few weeks, I think we'll be doing a few March Madness Top 5s just because this time of season is just so much fun. But, you know, everyone fills out a March Madness bracket. And there are a number of different ways you can fill out your bracket. There, you know, there's a million different ways. There's a million different scenarios that you can use to fill out your bracket. I've seen people do a coin flip on every single pick. Yeah, this pick, coin flip, this pick. The problem with that, you end up with like a couple 16s in your final four, and it ends up being a big mess. I see teams or people pick their teams based on the mascot. Who would win? A Wolverine or a Bulldog? Well, the Wolverine would probably win. Okay, then I'm going with that. Now, there are those out there that are just guessing, and you know the person in your office pool, and they're just going to throw down some names. They have no idea. Then there are those, you're a little more serious, like you want to try to do well. You love the game, and you love March Madness, and you want to try to actually win your bracket. You're kind of looking for an advantage in filling out your bracket. Well, here's the thing to keep in mind. Most people make the same mistake again and again and again when they fill out their March Madness brackets. There are a few mistakes that you have to be sure not to make. And if you make those mistakes, I'm telling you right now, they're going to cost you. They're going to hurt you as you go through. So if you want to improve your March Madness bracket, here are the top five mistakes most people make when they fill out their bracket. A couple things you might want to avoid. If you're filling one out, you might want to try to avoid these mistakes. Number five, picking against teams that don't belong. So when you think about that this year, I know there's a lot of controversy. Doesn't it seem like every single year that kind of seems to be the cool thing to talk about now? If you head over to our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com, I wrote an article just about how we always are complaining about the teams, you know, that get into March Madness. There's always a team that was left out. There's always a team that shouldn't have got in. There's always a team that, oh, they really had the record, and for whatever reason, the committee did. It's a tough job. You're trying to get 68 teams seeded. If you come up 69 or 70, I'm sorry. I wish Monmouth would have got in. I'll be honest with you. I wish St. Bonaventure's would have got in. I won't lie. I think St. Mary's probably deserved to get in. But if you can't do it over the course of 35 games, then I guess that's just how it goes. But what we do when we start picking our bracket is you start looking at teams like Syracuse this year. Should Syracuse have really gotten in? They had some really bad losses. Yes, they had a couple good wins. They had some really bad losses. Tulsa looked horrible. I don't know anyone who had Tulsa in. Tulsa didn't have Tulsa in. Maybe even Michigan, who was, you know, kind of at the bottom level of that Big Ten, just above the horrible teams. But here's the thing. It seems like every single season we get a team or two like that we say, well, they probably shouldn't have even got in. And all week they hear about how they shouldn't have got in, and they have a great focused week of practice, and they say, whatever happens, we're winning a game in March Madness. And everybody picks against him. And not only do they come out and they win, sometimes they win two games. And everybody picked against them because they said, well, they don't belong in to begin with. Here's another thing to keep in mind. Those play-in games, we saw Wichita State Vandy last night. We saw Florida Gulf Coast beat Farley Dickinson last night. They give you just a little bit of momentum. So you might say, well, they played in the play-in game. I mean, they're so bad they had to play in the play-in game. Yeah, and they got a little bit of momentum. And when they come out in that next game against a better opponent, they don't have the nerves. They don't have, you know, the hyperventilation that you can sometimes get early in a big game. They've already won one tournament game. And sometimes there's a little bit of an advantage. Be careful about picking against those teams that we think don't belong. It always seems like they find a way to get a win and surprise everybody. Number four on our list of mistakes that people make when they fill out their bracket. Do you have a number four or a number five seed winning it all? Because I'm telling you right now, it doesn't happen very often. In fact, in 77 years, it's happened once. The Arizona Wildcats were a number four seed when they won it all in 1997. Remember that group with Bibby and Miles Simon? They were a number four seed. That's it. So here's the reason I tell you that. Because if you have Cal, if you have Maryland, Duke, Baylor, Kentucky, even Indiana, and I really like Indiana sitting there at the five, Iowa State or Purdue, the odds are, let's just say, not forever in your favor. Because four and five seeds do not usually get through. They end up having to play ones and ones and ones the further into the bracket they get. And so a four or five seed doesn't usually win it. Again, 76 out of 77 times, they haven't won it. Be careful of picking a four or five seed to win it all. Number three on our list of mistakes you might make. Hey, don't pick all four number ones. I know it's easy to sit there and just say, well, let's just pick all the number one seeds. Let's just go, let's see, this year we've got Kansas, we've got Oregon, we've got Virginia, And we've got North Carolina. There's my picks. I'll win because there's all the top teams. Again, it's only happened once that all four seeds that were ranked number one, all the number ones got all the way through to the Final Four. And that was just in 2008. So if you have Kansas, Carolina, Oregon, and Virginia as your Final Four, you're kind of tempting fate. I don't know that that's going to happen. The odds say it's not going to happen. It doesn't happen very often. Be careful. Don't pick all number ones on your bracket there. It's going to get you in some trouble. Number two on our five mistakes that people make when they fill out their bracket. This is a tough one. And I'm telling you this personally. This is a tough one for me personally. Picking with your heart, not your head. Now, you know you get in a bracket, and maybe you're in the office pool, or maybe it's just with your buddies, and you go through, and you're like, he's like a big Miami fan. Oh, yeah, he's got Miami winning the whole thing. Oh, of course he does, yeah. As dangerous as that is, and it is dangerous to just sit there and say, well, my favorite team is blah, so, that's who I'm picking. And it doesn't make any sense. But you know what? I've watched them this year, and they're really, really good. Oh, I know they are. Yeah, they're tremendous. I know Farley Dickinson is the greatest team you've ever seen. I get it. You went there. You're a fan of the team. Whatever. Be careful picking with your heart over your head. But here's the other side. It's not just picking the team you like, as easy as that is to do. Are you familiar with what's the German word? Schadenfreude, I think, is what it is. You know, taking pleasure in others' misfortune. I don't know that we really have a word for that in the English language. But here's the thing to keep in mind. The fact that you hate Kansas doesn't mean they're going to lose to Austin Peay in the first round. You see what I'm saying? It's not just the teams that you like. Sometimes we sit there and we say, well, I hate Kentucky, so I think Kentucky's going to get upset. Well, great, but are they really going to get upset? Is Kansas really going to lose to Austin Peay? Probably not. 1 versus 16? Yeah, probably not. Governors, I don't think they have enough. By the way, another quick story. Austin Peay, down in Texas, might have in the history of college basketball the greatest cheer that I've ever heard. You know, back in the day, back in the 70s, there was a playground legend named James Fly Williams. His nickname was Fly Williams, and dude was a playground legend back in New York. I mean, he's a stud. He ended up signing and going to Austin Peay down in Texas. And the cheer that they would do for him was, the fly is open, let's go pee. Number one on our list, the top five mistakes that most people make when they fill out their March Madness bracket. I hate to say this, because we do. We get our bracket, we get it on Sunday night, and we look at it, and we hear the experts talk, and we talk about it, and we think about it, and we write down, and we scratch that out, and we fill out it again, and we look, and then she said that they have a really good rebounding team, and that's going to really be hey, don't take too long. There are no algebraic formulas on this thing. Sometimes it's just a little bit of luck. You know, most of the winners, and I've done okay in some March Madness brackets that I've done, but most of the winners that fill out these March Madness brackets, do you know what they all say? Yeah, I did it in like 5 minutes. I didn't really know what I was doing. That's the thing. Don't overanalyze it. Don't sit there and just, I don't know, I got to pick a 5 or a 12, and I'm not really sure. I did this one, and I scratched it out, and I redid it, and hey, first instinct, pick it, put it down. That's probably the best instinct, because at the end of the day, when you're talking about March Madness, it comes down to just a little bit of luck. You got to be a little bit good, and you got to be a little bit lucky. And it's kind of the same way when you fill out your March Madness bracket. Hey, next week, we will take a look at the first two rounds of the tournament, and we will look forward to the Sweet 16 and where we'll be going from there. Some of the best teams, some of the best players, some of the best stories going on in the tournament so far. Plus, the NBA continues to get better and better. We start to get, you know, playoff formations starting to situate themselves. Some teams start to separate themselves a little bit. The NFL, like we've said before, it just kind of is a year-round thing. We will always have some NFL news because it seems like it's always in the news. And as always, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5. You never know which way it's going to go. today. Hopefully we helped you out. Get your March Madness bracket filled out to the best that you possibly can, but you never know which way the Daily Dose Top 5 is going to go. You always want to tune in for it. If you get a chance, head over to iTunes or wherever you download the podcast. Give us a quick rating and review. We would appreciate that so much. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Hope you all have a great week. Enjoy the games, everybody. I will see you next week.
Welcome to the Startup Fair. Are you an exhibitor?
Yeah, Rachel Dunn, Twinkle Cupcakes.
Right. Got your schedule and coffee token?
Yep.
Oh, and your public liability insurance?
No.
We need it for all stallholders. Contact Direct Line. Their annual public liability policy covers you at trade fairs, and they'll email right away to confirm you're covered.
So I could still set it up today?
Sure.
With an extra coffee token.
Nice try. Next, please.
Instant proof and confirmation of cover. Can your public liability insurance do that? Search Direct Line Public Liability Insurance. Valid email address required, underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.